I'm going to be a little bit self-indulgent here because I've profited over the years so much from your writing and the way that you have looked at passages with such different eyes, sometimes startlingly so, the way that, for example, you see the Song of Songs as some love story between God and his whole creation. And that was a reading that was entirely surprising to me. And I wonder if you would mind just, as it were, walking us through a passage that has meant something to you so that we can see that scholarly gaze and have those perspectives before us for a moment or two. That would be just a privilege.
I'd be glad to do that. a poem that I've been working with recently in my own writing and preaching is Psalm 65. And it's a psalm that is often used in the U.S. at Thanksgiving time because it is it's a kind of harvest psalm. I'm just going to begin and I'll highlight some verses for you and you can follow along as you wish. So Psalm 65, and the first phrase in Hebrew is Lecha Dumiati La, to you, praise is silence is praise, O God, in Zion. To you, silence is praise, God, in Zion. If you're looking at most published translations of the Psalms, including in the Alternative Service Book or the Book of Common Prayer in the U.S., that's not what you'll find. You'll find praise is fitting. You are to be praised. But actually, the second word in Hebrew is silence. So I think it's translated other ways because people simply can't make sense of what it means to say that silence is praise. And God is addressed here as God in Zion. That's unusual in the Psalms. And in the second verse, God is praised as Shomer Tfilah, the one who hears prayer. That's unique in the Bible. Obviously, it's an assumption in the Bible that God hears prayer, but only in this psalm is God addressed as the one who hears prayer. God in Zion. Zion, the poetic name for Jerusalem. This is, in biblical geography, you might say, the navel of the universe. It's the place from which creation began. At least that's the sort of that's how, in both Christian and Jewish post-biblical legend, Zion is understood. And the Bible itself interweaves the language of Jerusalem and the language of Eden in multiple places, including Genesis and Psalms. So God in Zion, this is already a reference to, at least an oblique reference to God as creator, and we will see that this is a creation-oriented psalm in the widest sense. And then in verse 3, we hear Adecha kol basar yavo'u, to you all flesh will come. All flesh, that phrase that recalls the covenant in Genesis 9 after the flood. So a sense that all creatures come before God, not just humanity. And then immediately after that, sort of surprisingly, with this very promising beginning, we hear immediately that deeds of iniquity are too much for me. Our transgressions, you are the one who atones for them. So the first thing that comes out of this silence is an awareness of our sin. a confession of sin, acts or words, you could also translate it that way, of iniquity, they are overwhelming for me. But then there's no detailing of what those sins are. It goes on then to say to God, fortunate, blessed, privileged even are those whom you choose to draw near, who dwell in your courts. This is a pilgrimage psalm. And the prayer that comes out of that entry into God's courts is striking, I think, in the context of an awareness of sin. Let us be satisfied. I'm in verse 5 now. Let us be satisfied with the goodness of your house, the holiness of your sanctuary, your palace. Let us be satisfied with the goodness of your house. We in the industrialized world may stand in need of that particular prayer more than any other right now. Let us be satisfied. And then in the very next verse, we hear about God's answer to prayer with awesome deeds, but tzedek, in righteousness. You could also translate that following Margaret Barker, in sustainability. Tzedek is a relationship, tzedek tzedakah. This is a relationship of a healthy relationship amongst humans and non-human creatures, and between God and the creature. God answers us with awesome deeds in, I'm going to hold to that, sustainability. And then there's a picture of God's awesomeness manifested in creation at both macro and then micro levels. So beginning at the macro level in verse 7, God sets in place the mountains in his strength. He is girded with power. And then we have God stilling the seas. So this is the macro level. But I'm just going to follow from that opening word, the one who sets in place the mountains in his strength. We have the very same word a few verses down in verse 10, but now at the micro level, when it speaks of God setting the grain in the seed heads. This is verse 10. You visit the earth, you water it abundantly, you enrich it. This is a picture of God doing what every farmer in the hill country around Zion, Jerusalem does, tending that earth, which is so marginal for human habitation and semi-arid ground. Important to remember that Jerusalem is a high desert city, 4 years out of 10 are drought years in the hill country of Israel, Canaan. So God sets the seed in the seed heads, for thus you set it just so. That's verse 10. So God doing the God who settles the mountains now settles the soil so it won't erode, and settles the grain in its seed heads so it can grow. Macro and micro levels. The only picture in the Bible of God as a peasant farmer, which almost every Israelite was. And then in verse 12, we see the yield. You crown the year with your goodness. Again, that same word that maybe would be satisfied with the goodness of your house. You might see the whole world here as God's house. You crown the year with your goodness. And I love this next verse. Your wagon tracks drip ripeness. Your wagon tracks drip ripeness. The picture here is God, like a peasant farmer, riding home, or maybe walking behind the wagon at the end of the day. It's overflowing with grain into the wagon tracks. And around it are the pastures of the wilderness similarly dripping. And the hills that, remember, God had set in place are girded with joy. And now we have these clothing pictures for the earth. The pastures, verse 14, are clothed with the flocks. The valleys are cloaked in grain. They shout out. They even sing. And finally, the silence that is praise is broken, but it's not broken by human words. It's broken by the rejoicing of creation in cooperation with God. And I think that this psalm gives us a picture. Certainly any Israelite farmer, which again was conservative estimate, 98% of the population in biblical times, any farmer in the hill country of Israel reading this psalm would have recognized her or himself in this work and seen that that is how I image God in what I do every single day.